This is Ozarks at Large. For the typical teenager, life is full of plenty of everyday struggles. Fitting in with friends, completing homework on time, dealing with family. But what about having the added pressure of fighting to protect the fate of the world? In The Steward, the first of four books in the Wheeled Fae Journals series, Cuban-Irish teenager Maggie O'Shea relocates with her family from Florida to the Ozark Mountains. While spending time on her family's land, she discovers the world of the Fae, or fairies. She also uncovers the important role she may play in protecting the Fae's sacred land. This fantasy series is the creation of Chris Shields, a professor of criminal justice at the University of Arkansas. Chris has spent years in the world of academia and has degrees in criminal justice, sociology, public policy, and law. Chris recently came by the studio to talk about the first book in his series, and while he was here, I asked him how all of these degrees resulted in him becoming a writer.
My friends have told me I have more degrees than a thermometer. I don't know. I love learning, and I've always enjoyed that. And one of the things I also enjoy is kind of that creative outlet. And after I finished my PhD, I said, absolutely no more. Because the question among my friends and family are, okay, what degree next? And I said, this is it. This is it. No more. But, you know, the evenings, I'd just kind of started piddling around with, you know, other things. I mean, I have all this spare time, you know, it's a huge joke, of course, but just for fun. And it actually, the writing came about from prepping for a class I was teaching. I taught it for the first time 3 years ago, Serial Crime, and it was really dark, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Doing all the background reading and setting up the course. And so I did that through the summer in the mornings, and then the evenings I needed something just lighthearted that I could escape, and writing was what did it for me. It was just such a wonderful world to go to. I've actually enjoyed these books, writing these books, so much. The only thing I like more is teaching.
Do you have any sort of background as a writer?
Not formally. I mean, I wrote...
lots of papers for all your degrees.
Oh, yeah. I've done a lot. I've done a lot of academic writing, and when I was a lawyer, I did a lot of legal writing. As far as creative writing goes, I wrote my first play in the fourth grade. I actually got in trouble. My fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Parks, caught me. We were watching a film, and I was writing a play, a Christmas play.
Uh-huh.
And she grabbed the notebook and went up to the front of the class and started reading it. And she came back and handed it to me and said, you go right ahead and write. And my fourth grade class, we put it on as a class in the classroom because I created parts for everyone. And so that was kind of the first experience. And I've done it off and on through high school. I wrote nothing I ever tried to get published, but I wrote stories that I'd let my parents read. And I won an essay writing contest in high school, my senior year. But I never really considered writing until about 4 years ago.
And so you started working on this about 2 years ago, I guess 2012?
Yeah, the initial idea for it came in 2011. And I began working on it probably about did the research in the summer of 2010. And then I had the first book written over a year and a half ago because I tried to go through traditional publishers. And to do that, you have to go through agents, 196 agents later. And I couldn't even get them to look at anything more than a query letter. I just decided to go ahead and self-publish because that is the trend now.
It is, very much so. And this is a... young adult fantasy / romance novel. And there seems like there's a lot of those out there. I mean, it seems, you know, a couple years back with the Twilight coming out, that series being very popular with the vampires. And it seems you can't go to a bookstore where the teen section isn't, you know, vampires, fallen angels, probably zombies in there a little bit. And even with some dystopian novels like the Hunger Games, it seems to kind of be very in right now. So this book dealing with fairies seems very on trend with that. So with so many of these types of stories out there, I mean, do you try and set yourself apart or do you just go for it because this is what you like?
No, I absolutely did try to set myself apart, and I tried with the protagonist. I did not want to do the classic love triangle. I mean, it's so overdone. And, you know, readers spot it a mile away. And I've had a number of people who have read it leave comments, and they thought from reading the description and starting out that it was going to be just another Twilight / fill in the blank. And most of them have been pleasantly surprised because I do not take that route. I thought long and hard about the outline. I have the entire series outlined. That's how I work. I just do an outline and work from it. But I did try to set it apart. And all those layers you're talking about, also, one of the things I tried to do was to make it as believable as possible. You know, providing explanations of why no one knows about the Fae. And, you know, why the family is so secretive about the Fae. And I just had the best time doing it. And as it, you know, over that summer, as it slowly fell together, and I had these epiphanies, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's going to be fantastic. But yeah, I had so much fun putting it together. See, I'm one of those that I would read a book or watch a movie and go, you know, I would have done something different. I would have done this here. And I'm terrible about, you know, especially with movies, picking out problems and gaps and holes. I just can't stand them. And so I really tried to be cognizant of making sure that there weren't gaps in logic, or at least they were believable. Because, I mean, you do have to have a flight of fancy and use your imagination. Sure. But, yeah.
So in the story, the protagonist, Maggie, her aunt is sometimes responsible for some of the explanations, as you mentioned. And so she's very much a storyteller. You know, truth to Maggie, some less truth to the townspeople, if you will.
Right.
So the storyteller, as I understand it, your grandfather was quite the storyteller, and he sort of helped inspire this?
Yeah. Well, the storytelling part he did, not the story itself. Right. Yeah, my dad's father, I actually kind of make a reference. I've always wanted to write a book to recount some of his folklore and his own tales and call it Alton's Kitchen Table Prevarications and Other Ball-Faced Lies. And I dropped that title in the book. Because my grandfather absolutely taught me how to tell a story. And he told me the same stories over and over, but each time they got a little bigger, they got a little bolder, and you knew when he was about to tell you a big lie. He would circle his lips or make an O with his lips and push his tongue into his cheek, and inevitably the story changed and it got bigger and bolder. And I just loved listening to his stories. Didn't believe a word he said, but that wasn't the point. He was, you know, that generation where they entertained in very, very much a kind of an Ozark, you know, kind of feel, because all the stories had to do with the Ozarks or Oklahoma, Green Country in Oklahoma. But yeah, love my grandfather's storytelling.
And like Maggie's family, your family has kind of own the same amount of land for a while.
They haven't owned the land, but we my father's side of the family settled in this area in the 1850s, and my mom's side of the family has been in and out of the area for a long time. Now, we don't own the land. I would love to be able to inherit 2,700 acres.
Sure.
But yeah, I have family members all over Northwest Arkansas, Northeastern Oklahoma, and I used to have some family members in Southwest Missouri, some cousins still. Yeah, we've been here for a very long time. And it was, I just feel tied to this place.
Well, you mentioned research earlier in the interview, and I know you researched, you know, folklore from Celtic, Scottish, English folklore, some more information from the Osage and the Cherokee. What was that research like, and why those particular cultures?
Well, it has to tie into what happens in the second, particularly the third book, when it becomes much more global. Because what I always wanted to do was to find a story that was centered in Northwest Arkansas. And I love fantasy stories. And the problem with a lot of fantasy stories, they pick, you know, either sexy locations or locations that don't exist. And I wanted, you know, to kind of highlight how I consider it magical, you know, the Ozarks. If you've ever been hiking or driven through a valley on an early morning and there's a deep fog, the sun sets, the changes of weather, it really is magical. And there's so many folk stories that tie into not necessarily the same beliefs, but similar beliefs. And if you go back far enough, I mean, the Osage, and I'm part Osage, part Cherokee, and so I kind of have a, you know, connection there. But the Osage, this was their land. And then after they moved to Oklahoma, then, you know, the Cherokees had settled in this area for a brief period of time in the early 19th century. So I wanted to play tribute and use their folklore and tie it all together. Because one of the problems I have with a lot of fantasy stories, it seems like some authors, and I enjoy them, but some authors just throw in every possible type of creature imaginable. I wanted one, you know, mythological race of beings that could basically, I don't want to give too much away, but take any shape and be, you know, kind of the catalyst for all of these different myths around the world to make it much more believable. So I had to pay tribute to Native American legends. I just absolutely had to.
Well, I thought that was one of the most interesting parts is when early on when Maggie's sort of being introduced into the world of fairies, the world of the fae, and kind of explaining how all of these, what we consider mythological creatures, are basically one form of a fairy, you know, a troll, a gnome, mermaids, Bigfoot. So that was all your idea.
Yeah.
Was there anything in your research that maybe inspired that? Were there some cultures where they attributed, say, a mermaid to a type of fairy, or was that really just...
I didn't find anything specifically on that. I mean, I know there's quite a bit out there.
Right.
And even researching the fae, there are, and I'm not talking about fiction, but, you know, people actually believe in the fae and they've written books. And that's what I did my research on, not from fiction, but from, you know, these spiritual guides and other things about the fae to see what these people believed. And there was no common theme.
Okay.
There were some undertones, but there's so many different versions and so many, you know, diversions. I mean, the belief in the fae, some believe they're fallen angels, and some believe that they were, or the Seath or She, depending on the pronunciation used in Ireland, that they were the descendants of Tuatha De Danann and all of these different things. And so I just wanted to kind of step away from what people believed, those people who do believe, and what people had written about, and just kind of create something believable. Because that was my goal all along, was just to create believability. But at the same time, I had an argument. We watch, some friends and I, we occasionally watch the show on Bigfoot Hunters and just get the biggest kick out of it.
Uh-huh.
And one of my friends said, absolutely, positively, no way. And so I threw in Sasquatch and Bigfoot in this just as a joke, as a way to explain, well, actually, they, at least in this world, they do exist. They're fake.
It takes place in the Ozarks, you know, specifically around Eureka Springs, and there's mentions of Fayetteville and her swim team in Bentonville and things like that. Because you're dealing with a real place and one that probably local readers are very familiar with, do you feel that you have to remain completely true to the things that are there? Do you feel liberty to create, you know, this shop on the corner or things like that? I mean, you mentioned real things like the Christ of the Ozarks, the what do the kids refer to it as? The chalk monster?
Yeah, I'd heard that years ago when I was visiting Eureka. Some friends of mine, we went to the Crescent Hotel and we're up on the observation lounge on the back. And one of my friends said that, and I cracked up. I just thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. And I realized that, you know, it could be very offensive, so I apologize if it offends.
Sure.
But, I did want one of the things about books I love is when you read something like Dan Brown's. You read something, you sit and you can Google it, and you're like, oh, my gosh. And there's a real place. And before I started writing the first book, I mentioned the Garden Street Bistro in Eureka. And so I asked for the owner's permission. And then Turpentine Creek, I went and I asked for their permission. And I did want to use real places. Now, I refer to a restaurant that doesn't exist and a couple other places, although it's based off a restaurant that is there. But I just... if I'm actually going to have a character interacting with a place a lot, I wanted to ask for permission first.
And another, I guess, local character, if you will, that makes an appearance in the book, Coyne Harvey. How did you come up with the idea for explaining sort of his, I guess, rise and downfall by using the fairies? I was very amused by that.
Well, you know, in the original draft of the book was 216,000 words. This is about 102,000, so I cut over half the book out.
Wow.
Yeah,
I just
sat down and wrote and
love.
Well, no, part of it, there's the very first trial, and this was the Earth trial, and that actually happened in the original book. Original draft, it happened in chapter 16 rather than beginning in chapter 1 through 3.
Right.
And I wanted to make it as believable as possible, and so I wanted to tie in local Ozark folklore to give something, you know, give people something to chew on. And I love the story of Montanay and Coyne Harvey, and I've read about him for years. Because you grew up in Northwest Arkansas, you can't help but hear about Montanay and Coyne Harvey. And I've always kind of had this romantic fascination with places that no longer exist.
That's an excellent example.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's, all that's left now is just a ruin. And in the last 2 years, they put a chain link fence around it to keep it from being vandalized.
They have. Mm-hmm.
But the first time I visited, I just remember feeling so haunted by it. And I just, and thank goodness for the internet, I've been able to do a lot more research mm-hmm. and see the pictures of the gondolas and the proposed pyramid he wanted to build and the amphitheaters. And it's just, yeah, I just felt like I wanted to bring some of those local myths and legends in. Of course, that wasn't a myth, but I changed it up to be able to explain it.
Chris Shields is the author of the Wheeled Fae Journal series and a criminal justice professor at the University of Arkansas. He recently came by the studio to discuss The Steward, the first book in the series. The first and second book in the series are available on Amazon.com. Locally, the books can be found at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville and Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge in Eureka Springs. Chris says he hopes to release the third book of the series in April. If you would like to meet the author, he will have a book signing from 1 to 3 p.m. February 9th at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. More information is available at Wheeled, that's W-E-A-L-D, Fae, F-A-E, journals.com.
North Korea delivers a blunt warning. Expect another nuclear test. And the country's new leader insists its arsenal of long-range rockets is designed to hit the United States. I'm Neil Conan. Why North Korea works so hard to maintain us as its mortal enemy, and what drives these latest threats, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1, immediately following this edition of Ozarks at Large, here on KUAF 91.3 FM. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Eureka Springs. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thanks so much for listening. Tune in tomorrow at noon for an all-new edition of Ozarks at Large. I will be back along with my co-host, Kyle Kellums. Thanks again for listening, and I hope your week is off to a fantastic start.